Hello, and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your host, Marianne Monson. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do, and what have they learned through their creative process? I'm thrilled to have in the studio with me today, Portland, North Portland-based poet, who is the 2025 Writer-in-Resident recipient for the Writers Guild. Welcome, Marge.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, super happy to have you. So, as I mentioned, you are the 2025 recipient of the Writer-in-Residency program. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been such a wonderful experience.
It's been great to meet you as part of it, and we're really looking forward to your reading. We're thrilled to have you in Astoria writing poems and working on your magic. So why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about how you heard about the program, the Writer-in-Residency program.
Yeah, I'm really blessed to work with a lot of wonderful people in the community around Vancouver and Portland who are writers. That's not my day job, but I have worked hard to reach out and find out who's writing and what are they writing. I was participating with this really cool organization right around Portland since when I first came to Portland in 2007, 2008. And met some great friends through there. And I've had some little writing groups and had the chance to participate in some of the great, open mics and opportunities that are around. But like many people with working and doing all the extracurricular work that we also do, poetry is something that I kind of have to carve out time for, outside of that. And a good friend through one of those networks, Armin Tolentino, who was serving as the Clark County Poet Laureate, said, hey, this is coming up and, people should apply for it. Great opportunity, this residency. And I started looking into the organization, and really a lot of the work of the Writers Guild really resonates with me, that idea of, providing space for people to do the work that we couldn't otherwise do, in the space of our lives. And I took the opportunity to apply just because I felt like I needed a kind of kick in the pants to put structure to some ideas that I was having about a project.
Yeah, wonderful. So we'll get into that project in a minute, but I wanted to mention that Armin Tolentino has taught a couple workshops for us at the Writers Guild, and he's just such a generous, wonderful person and poet. And so, yeah, he's great. And also, why don't you tell us just a real quick overview of Write Around Portland, which I think is a completely amazing organization. Just a shout out to them.
Yes, I don't get to do a lot of volunteering with them anymore, but I have really enjoyed the opportunity to get to participate both as a workshop participant and then as a leader, and sometimes just doing things like data entry for them. They are able to do an enormous amount with a little bit of funding. And when I say enormous, I mean huge impacts in the community. Their byline is respect writing community, and they're able to pull together groups that foster a mutual recognition of each other's work. And I always enjoy, being in that space, because it's those workshops are a place where we really get to listen to one another and celebrate and highlight, other people's voices. It's just a great organization.
Yeah. They facilitate writing workshops that last for, I think, 6 to 8 weeks, right? And then they hold a reading event, and I think there's sometimes publication attached to it too, right?
Yeah. So the biggest and most awesome readings that you can go to in the Portland area, those 6 to 8 week cycles are done partnering through organizations. So it might be people experiencing houselessness, or there might be people who are in a hospital situation or in a particular housing space, and so there's some element of shared community. I got to facilitate a workshop for survivors of sexual assault in Spanish at one point. Huge, diverse array of programs that they offer.
Yeah.
That makes the readings really amazing.
Rich and and incredible. Honestly, when I moved to Astoria, I was familiar. I'd meant to volunteer with them, and the timing had never worked. but I had gone to one of their readings, and so I knew of their work and just thought it was incredible, and then also knew about literary arts. And it was really those two organizations that inspired me to start the Writers Guild, which is very tiny, tiny little bit taste of the work that those organizations do, but, you know, attempting to be in the same vein of
Absolutely. Yeah. You can see there's a common thread there, I think, through all that, that the work that they're doing to bring people together around writing, really similar to your mission at the Guild. And then just the personalities of people who are writers that understand, like you do, that this isn't a solitary act or a competitive act you know, it's something that we do in order to share it with one another.
Thank you. I admire that organization so much. So, okay, let's talk about your collection, your project that you proposed in your application for the residency. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So there's lots of ways to tell a story, but I think that this came about for me because a few years ago, so I've always written poetry here and there and submitted sometimes to journals. I mostly write poetry. It's often about nature. And I was teaching English kind of by accident. I'm a Spanish teacher. I'm terrible at teaching English, but I got handed these five sections of junior English 1 year. And
I don't believe you that you're terrible.
Oh, no.
I bet you're wonderful at it.
No, that's not a humble. My students told me, we can see that you're struggling. And it is true. I mean, it is true that when you, and you know, because you're a teacher, it takes a long time to learn a new curriculum or a new. Sure. So in the year that I was teaching, that was that February was the first time that kind of ChatGPT hit the scene. And I had to scramble to figure out what can I do that would encourage students to write something that lends itself to real authenticity and that they could enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to enjoy 100% of what you know, every student is different. You got 147 different, you know, opinions on what works. But I asked students to do an interview with somebody they knew about work, their work experience. And there are software that you can use now to transcribe automatically all the interview data. So I had them do that. And I had them do that based on, we read some essays from Studs Terkel's book Working. Mm-hmm. These are amazing you know, interviews with people who are just talking about what they do all day and how they feel about what they do. We often read those things and think, oh, this is like just a direct interview. But no, Studs Terkel had to do a lot of work to take that raw interview data with all the ums and all the messiness and form it into essays that are really compelling and that also preserve the voice of the speaker. So working with students to do that was really fun. It came up with a lot of, you know, like, gosh, your grandpa is really rambling on a lot here. What can you do to preserve and to really let that rambling quality shine while at the same time not boring your reader? Those are important decisions that we make as writers, and to have students be able to make those when the subject matter was somebody that they knew or cared about was really interesting. And it produced some essays that I really liked, and I started thinking, well, if we can do that with interview data to make essays, can we also do that to make poetry? And I think there are great poems that are based on people's work experiences during the day. So I've kind of created several different clumps, you know, within the work, examples of poetry that I've written, but also prompts or invitations for people to write about their own work experience, about the work experience of others, and that can be based on a transcript or conversation. And then the third clump is kind of writing about envisioning a different landscape of work. And those are poems about explicitly calling out injustice, or maybe poems about insubordination, you know, and collective action. In doing this project and having the wonderful gift of this time this week, I've had the opportunity to have lots of great conversations with people about what it is that they do for work.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And I'll just kind of back up and say, you know, from the other side of the table, as we were reviewing the applications, like every year it's so humbling and also a little frustrating because we get such wonderful, rich, and varied applicants, you know, and the work is just often so strong, and we wish that we could give writer and residency experiences to all of them, but we have to just pick one. And so, you know, we really use the criteria of taking a look at the quality of the work and then also how would this experience benefit the writer or the project? You know, is it something that would provide some sort of respite from their regular life? You know what I mean? Is it something that they might not necessarily be able to make happen in their life without this opportunity, you know? So that's something that we weigh. But then the last thing, and in some ways really the most important, it's, is there a connection between this project and this particular community, meaning Astoria in the Lower Columbia? Because that's our mission, you know, is to foster the literary arts in this particular region. And as we looked at your project particularly, you know, most often I would say there's like usually some connection of the physical space being important. But with yours, you know, when the poetry of labor, I think as a board, we just recognized how beautifully that ties to Astoria and what Astoria has always been about, which is a town that labors and a town that labors in coordination with the natural landscape of this region, but also values labor and the different types of labor. And so we thought that this community would really love to hear from you and to learn about your project. And so that was a big part of why we were pleased to be able to select you. So that's kind of like the backstory, I guess, of how we ended up here. But if you want to, so can you give us like a little peek into where you are in the process? Like, how many of these poems have you written? How many do you anticipate writing? I mean, it's kind of fun because it's very much an evolving project, yeah?
Yeah, and I had pictured it being, and I think in my application I was picturing something that's like a chapbook length series on this, you know, topic that would include not just examples of poems, things that I've written, but also prompts and ideas for inviting people to write their own poetry. It's gotten a little bit bigger than chapbook length, but it also includes a lot of like messiness.
Always.
So it's like, yes. So it's kind of spilling off the table more than I had thought, but yeah. I think that there's ways to kind of, you know, gather it up and.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about for you, but for me, writing and revising is kind of this like, it has to grow and then it has to shrink like over and over again. Like it gets a little out of control and rambly and then I rein it back in and tighten it. And anyway, and then it just happens over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's fun to talk about this with you, particularly because, you know, this more than other kinds of poetry that I've worked on really involves thinking in different genres.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some things that I've looked at, of course, that are interviews, people that I've talked to or conversations, but then there's also things that might be like an existing essay, you know, and thinking about how language talks to itself across genres, you know, and how different forms.
Yes.
Whether they're poetic forms or literary genres, you know, can lend themselves to communicating different subjects.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, do you want to read us a poem from this collection?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to read a poem and then I'm going to I'll talk about it first. You on this show a little while ago, earlier this year, there was a author who I'd never heard of before. I think his name's Jason Arias. And in a conversation with the interviewer, Jason was talking about different you know, poetic forms and talked about erasure poems. And erasure poems are something that, boy, for English teachers love to do this because it's so much easier than presenting a kid with a blank page and saying, you know, be brilliant.
Yes.
You can say, here's a page full of words, just take some of them out, And it's not like all students love that, but many of them kind of embrace it. And it's fun actually as adults too. When you're stuck, having a prompt like that to allow yourself to just play is really, really vitally important. And I really enjoyed over this consulting with different people about forms and prompts and just allowing myself to play.
Right. Okay. So for people who don't know what erasure poetry is, can you just give us the 20-second overview?
Yeah. Picture you have like a text, any kind of text, and you just take out a bunch of words and what's left is the poem. Of course, there's much more intentionality behind that. I'll just read you the example.
Yes, please do. So the original poem was by...
It's an essay. It's actually a really brilliant. It's a brilliant essay.
So you took an by essay Jason Arias. Jason Arias.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Golden Hour.
All right.
When we get there, we'll have reflective vests on. We'll watch our six. Right now, we're still trying to get there. Your best chance of surviving. Trapped, severed, a grown man can bleed out. The dispatcher speaks, and I picture one of my sons, a leg, an arm, a skull. People are forming a half circle around the boy. That car was on this boy. The crowd lifted it off. How much can be achieved? Wheels bumping over the grass, we take our empty stretcher back to the fence line. Dust settles. Faith. Think he'll be all right. Longer than mayhem, unfazed, nodding, a lilt somewhere that I can just barely catch.
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you.
So what I did, you're asking about erasure poems. What I did was to read this article, and I got it through the library online after hearing the River Writers interview. And I I read it through once, and then I read through looking for elements that I wanted to pull out into a poem. And I set myself some rules. I decided I couldn't go backwards. So I couldn't go back to pick up a word that I wanted. And I couldn't add my own words. There's no ands or becauses or whatever that are mine. I did take some whole phrases, little chunks of sentences from Jason's work. But I allowed myself to put in punctuation however I felt like it. And then I felt sort of stuck. And so I decided each line will be 6 or 7 syllables. And when I did that, it allowed me to put like a little breath in there. Both to pause, and when I began to read it, it felt like a kind of a gasping that felt emergent, like this situation was an emergency situation. It's a really powerful essay, and part of the joy of doing that kind of poetry is you read and reread more and more deeply. I would never on my own have gone and looked up an essay about EMTs.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that work, and I enjoyed it especially having read it through 5 times and pulled out things and highlighted, it's fun. I think you should try it.
Beautiful and so powerful. So, actually, we are going to just take a really quick break and say that if you are just joining us, this is Marianne Monson for KMUN's River Writers, sponsored by the Writers Guild. And this morning, I'm speaking with writer in resident, recipient, and poet Marge Hogan. So, I think, do you want to give our listeners a prompt, or is that, would you like to just kind of have that be a prompt that you'd like to offer?
Do that.
Yes.
Do if you have a pencil right now, do that and think, especially if you think about something that you, I mean, of course you can take a piece that you love, but you could also take something that you're curious about and you haven't really allowed yourself the space to dive into it and reading and pulling words out to create a poem, even if it doesn't become something you could publish or use, is such a wonderful experience. This is a little bit trickier. Some of the works are really based in poetic forms that some people feel like are intimidating. You know, the villanelle, you know, or a pantoum, and I think sometimes people feel that those writing within a form can be really restrictive. And if you feel like that way, I will fight you. Maybe not to the death, but I feel like sometimes those kinds of forms can provide new spaces for us to explore things that we wouldn't have consciously explored if we were just trying to throw out free verse.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the difference between exploring an open field and exploring a forest. You know, there's just two kinds of structure.
So do you know Saidiya Hartman? She's like she's a historian, and she's an amazing historian. She does a lot. She's written a lot about like the experience of enslaved women. And she talks about resistance as a dance within an enclosure. That's her phrase. But anyway, what you're saying about poetry with rules reminds me of that. It's a dance within an enclosure. Isn't
yes.
it?
But one that you choose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One that you choose. In order.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of.
So that brings us to poetry as resistance, right? So.
Yeah.
And you want to talk a little bit about poetry and how you feel it is a political act in some ways.
Yeah, I think for this, I mean, poetry can be all kinds of things, but I think a really important part of this project to me is whether it's Studs Terkel's essays or some of the many amazing, you know, documentaries that we could have about people at work and people's work experience. I think that coming to understand one another's work and experiences at work. It's not just an act of human empathy. It's really a political act in the sense that those conversations are what informs our beliefs about the way that our society and economy should be.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, oh, it'd be awesome if everybody had a fair wage and adequate rest and dignity at work. But when it comes down to it, I just might vote for policies that take away people's rest and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And to fully understand one another's work, what does it take to be an EMT? You know, what mm-hmm. does it take to work at a nursing home? Helps us to make better choices, mm. you know.
Yeah, thank you. That's beautifully said. So I'm curious, you know, you're wrapping up your week-long residency. You usually in your normal life, you know, you're balancing teaching. I can hear the way that you're teaching. I imagine it limits your ability to engage with writing, with your own personal writing projects, but it also is clearly inspiring and informing it too, right? So how do you want to talk a little bit about balancing your day job, if you will, with writing, and then maybe contrasting it with how the residency has been for you?
Yeah, I don't know how to balance anything, really. I mean, like most people, I think it's just there's a lot of juggling. I think like many people, I'm devoted outside of my work. Right now, I'm serving as the vice president of my union right now.
Wow.
There's a lot of people who are doing things outside of their day job that they feel are important contributions to their community or to collective power or that kind of. And then in addition, you got to like do the laundry. And in addition, you got to like make some phone calls and somebody's going to be having a crisis. And the poetry that we write is often something that's on the back of a napkin or spoken into your phone or scribbled on something. And then eventually, 3 Sundays from now, you can kind of gather it into a little pile, right?
Right.
And so it's been such an amazing experience to go from feeling like poetry is something that you have to like forcefully carve time out of your schedule, you know, to feeling like my job this week is poetry. And I'm supposed to be, and you know, boy, the guild's going to be mad if I don't sit down and do my poetry, you know? So feeling that like
very mad,
like this is my purpose for right now. And I actually had to like carve out time to make some important phone calls, to take a shower, to like find something for lunch.
Uh-huh.
And it's such a beautiful experience. And I hope that we find ways, to give that to one another in our many creative pursuits, time to be quiet, time to not have to do the laundry.
Yeah.
You know? Time to not have to do constant caretaking.
Right. It reminds me of Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own, you know, and just privilege and class and issues of labor and creative work and balancing that, especially for women who I think often have a very different relationship with their creative work historically, right?
Yes.
And the way society does or does not support that creative work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember when I was in high school and enjoyed writing poetry, looking at examples or reading examples about people saying, well, if you really want to be a writer, you need to get up and write for 3 hours in the morning. And I just felt like I don't see examples of women doing that a whole lot.
Yeah.
I don't see that being.
Most haven't had the luxury of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or even much of a model of what that would look like. But it's interesting to me because I feel like maybe, I don't know for sure, maybe I'm just consoling myself, but I feel like maybe it cuts both ways. I mean, writing is always something that I've had to stuff into the edges of all my other things too. I've always been a worker first and also a writer and a mother, you know, which is another kind of work and labor that often, you know, is carried largely by women. So kind of stuffing it into the edges of my life rather than it being the main event or the main course, if you will. But I wonder in a way if it doesn't also make it more precious, more urgent, like give it a certain sense of like, so when I was in grad school, I got to work a little bit with Kate DiCamillo and, you know, she always wanted to be a writer and so what she did because she needed to support herself was she went and worked in a book warehouse. Like lifting physically books And I actually like just love that story, that she just loved books enough that she just wanted to physically be close to them no matter how, you know. And eventually, like, her books allowed her to, they became successful enough that it allowed her to work with them in a different way. But I mean, I don't know, like, when we have that relationship with our writing, we've really sacrificed for it, right? Mm-hmm. And anything we sacrifice for becomes really precious. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I think to me, there's an element of, you know, allowing one another to be playful is also a way to break down some of that. You know, if you feel like you have to carve out the time, or if you feel like you have to change your economic situation, so that you, if you feel like it's inaccessible to you, to feel you can just take 5 minutes out and play, and you don't have to be working on the novel of your life.
Right. You know? Yeah.
And it's a great entry into creating more spaciousness for yourself.
You know? Do you think that's part of why you write poetry? Because it's small and accessible and you can tinker with it here in between, you know, versus a novel?
I would not know how to write. I literally can't make my pen go all the way to the right margin.
You were just, do you remember like how you were first introduced to poetry? Is that like a memory for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think we had book. I'm lucky to have, you know, grown up in a household with books, you know, and with poetry books.
Yeah.
I think I was often solitary kind of person. And I also really like sounds. I really like sounds and playing with sounds. Especially a lot of children's poetry also has a lot to do with playing with sound. You know?
Yes, for sure.
That's why I'm kind of taken with this idea too of like, how do forms allow us to explore deeper into worlds of sound and the ways that sound informs meaning too.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. I love it. Well, we have to wrap up this conversation, but in the last few minutes, can you tell us, if listeners want to find your work, where can they find it right now?
Yeah, I've had the privilege and the real joy of going to some really cool poetry and writing opportunities in the Portland, Vancouver area. One of them is Poetry Street Northwest, which is way out in Camas. Poetry Street Northwest has a Wednesday night once a month open mic, and they've got great features. Another place that I've enjoyed going, I haven't been in a bit, I need to get back there, is Ghost Town in Vancouver. And then there's this great series called Humble Poets that's opened up in a really little coffee house on Killingsworth, and it's a great place to go on a Sunday, last Sunday of the month. I think it's at 4 p.m. They also have some writing events during the week too, but those are some just really great places to get together and share your work, and they're places that I've been and really enjoyed sharing my work.
Wonderful. Yeah, Elisa Carlson, who's done quite a bit for us, has read at Humble Poets, I know, and we're going to have you do some reading for us out here in Astoria sometime too.
Would love. Yes.
Yeah. Good.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Marge, for joining us today on River Writers, and thank you, listeners, as well, for listening to Marge and I discuss her creative process.
Thanks.
The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization promoting the literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more and become a member by visiting thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep the words flowing and your pencil sharp. I'm Marianne Monson for River Writers.